Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. If you suffer a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nall in Overland Park. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome in to another edition of Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Blake Schneiders. And though, Blake, we are once again away from each other, we are remote location today. Blake's back in the studio. I am at a weekend trip in Las Vegas. We're going to have a great 2 hours lined up for you today. So before we get it going, I always want to do it and swing it to Blake. Blake, my friend, how are you on this fine Saturday morning?
You know me, Mr. Johnson. I am always up, perky, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. It is some beautiful weather we got here in Kansas City, but you're out in the great old Sin City of Las Vegas. How is the weather out there? I can hear the birds chirping in the background.
Yeah, you do have the birds probably chirping in the background here. A bunch of the people I'm staying with right now all still asleep because it's 7 a.m. here. So it is an early wake-up call here in Vegas. But
well, man, I'm sure you went to bed real early last night, didn't do anything nefarious, definitely didn't go enjoy some beverages. I'm only assuming, you know?
Yeah, it was a very laid-back night last night. You know, Friday nights in Vegas, they can't be too wild, and especially not because of what we had to have lined up today. But one thing I was not expecting for Las Vegas, and I don't know why not, it was like 115 degrees yesterday. Now, you know it. I know it. Humidity is a different type of game here. So when you have 95, 96 degrees in Kansas with the humidity, you feel like it's a lot different here. Yesterday was like 110 to 115 all day. And it was something I had never experienced before in my life. Now, it didn't feel the hottest like environment I've ever been in. But still, it was one of those situations where when you walk around in the 110 to 115 degree weather, it's a different type of game. I don't know. Have you been to Vegas before, Blake?
Actually, believe it or not, I have not. I've been to Reno, which is the smaller cousin, but yes. I have not been to Vegas.
I could not describe to you the levels of heat there are right now. Now, I think outside, I'm doing the show outside from the Airbnb we're at, and it's still way too early in the morning, but I would probably put it at about, gosh, 86, 90 degrees already. I haven't checked the weather app, but it is a different type of heat this morning.
Yeah, you are in the desert, Jack. I don't know. I know you might be in the city, but you are also in the desert. So I can only imagine what it's like. I haven't been outside since about 5:45 this morning, and it was pretty cool this morning. So not really sure. It's supposed to get up to about 90, though, right when I'm about to hit the links, play some golf this afternoon. So it's probably going to be a scorcher. The humidity the last couple days has been killer, and we had some rain last night. So I was sweating inside. I don't even know how one does that. I was at work last night sweating inside the building.
Yeah, it's something where when you have Kansas, you have the humidity. So number one, you're going out to play golf today, and that's where you just feel like anytime it's 90 degrees, 95 degrees, it feels like it's about 115 in Kansas. But that was the first time in my life yesterday I'd experienced something about 110 to 115. But you did mention, you know, last night dealing with some rain, didn't know if the Kansas City Royals would be able to get their game in. But here's the cool thing. Is last night I went to this place called Stadium Swim in Las Vegas, and you had the opportunity to live bet whatever you wanted to do. We obviously were focused on game four of the NBA Finals, but I did put some money down on the Royals last night, who dominated the Baltimore Orioles by a score of 8-1. John Heasley dealt. MJ Melendez had a 3-run home run. Bobby Witt Jr. tripled, also drove in another run. It was a great night. A great night for these Kansas City Royals, and it's been tough to say that a couple of times, right? We have not been able to watch the Royals most of this year and say, you know what, I feel good about what happened on the field. I feel good about what's happened the last couple of weeks. But the Royals are on a three-game winning streak. And keep this in mind, Blake. The Royals are on a three-game winning streak right now. It's the first time this season they have matched that three-game winning streak. They have never had a winning streak longer of three games. They're 20-37 going into today. They could set their longest winning streak tonight. But when you just look at how the game went last night, how the game went before last night, obviously taking the first two from Baltimore, winning the series finale against Toronto, they are playing better. But last night was different. And here's what you look for with the Royals being just 20-37 this year. You know, wins are going to happen. It's a long season. There's still 100-plus games left in the regular season. But the best part of last night is that, number one, John Heasley dealt. And John Heasley has been a guy this season that, in the midst of all the losing, he has not been somebody in the rotation that really we can point the finger at and blame. He's had back-to-back quality starts going into last night. Last night, through seven innings, only gave up one hit, struck out seven. It was the best outing John Heasley's had in his big league career. Now, you may want to say it's Baltimore, right? It's Baltimore. You can't get too high in the situation. But you know what? A win is a win. And John Heasley needed a start like last night in his big league career because going up to this point, what was the one thing we'd seen from John Heasley that was, you know, he could battle. You know, he'll give you six innings. He'll give out three earned runs. The Royals wouldn't win the game. But you'll take a quality start from a young guy, a guy that last year wasn't even called up until, I want to say, at least late July or August. So he has not had the starting experience that Chris Bubich has had, that Brady Singer has had. But John Heasley's getting into that mode. And last night, hitting his spots, hitting the corners, throwing 96. You know, he's rolling in 83 to 84 mile an hour changeups. Baltimore was off balance all night. Now, he got a big lead early on that maybe allowed him to settle in. But number one, here we go. Blake, I'll throw it to you first for John Heasley. Is that John Heasley was fantastic last night. But when you watch a game like that, you're expecting, okay, you want the Royals to win. But you also want to see how can they win. You want the young guys to perform. And last night was about as great as it could be for the young guys performing. Bobby Witt Jr. played well. MJ Melendez, who we'll get into later on in this segment, was fantastic. But also John Heasley gave you one of the best starts you could have had this season for the Kansas City Royals. So, Blake, I'll swing it to you. Of John Heasley last night, from what you saw, what did you like? Maybe what did you dislike a little bit? But overall, the impressiveness John Heasley had on the bump, what did you take away from his start last night against the Baltimore Orioles?
I don't really think there was anything that you could take away that said it was not a great start. I mean, he went seven innings deep, only gave up one total hit through seven innings, got seven Ks, so about an average of a strike per inning. He was absolutely phenomenal. Didn't give up a single walk, didn't give up a single earned run, didn't have any errors. He pitched to his defense. His defense was great. Obviously, we saw the great diving catch in right field from MJ Melendez, who apparently can just do everything, which I know we're going to get into him a little bit later, but I was very impressed with Heasley. I have no negatives. He was getting everything across the plate properly. He was finding his marks, hitting his spots. He just looked good. And yeah, he did have a rough outing in the beginning. He did have a quality start last time, but you know, Heasley, this is the performance that we needed. This was on the same par as we've seen Brady Singer earlier in the year and Brad Keller earlier in the year. So, I mean, this is something that you also don't see a lot from Royals pitchers, especially this season. Seven innings pitched. That's not something the Royals do a lot. Like I said, Keller's done it. Singer's done it twice. Now Heasley's done it. If you can get these young guys getting deeper into the ball games, you don't have to rely on a bullpen right now that is really struggling. They are not helping out the starting pitching or this offense at all, especially late in games. So the more you can get these young guys going deeper into the ball game, it's only going to benefit the Royals. It's going to help the offense, who ever since the exchange of hitting coaches have been hitting really well. They just can't seem to keep these leads later in the game. So good for the Royals. Also, you mentioned the Baltimore Orioles. They still have a better record than the Royals by four games. So, you know, you can only beat who you play. So at the end of the day, you beat the Baltimore Orioles because the Royals are the worst team in baseball. So any improvement is a good improvement in my eyes.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to apologize for winning a baseball game. And the way the Royals have played, I don't care if it's Baltimore, I don't care if it's Oakland, I don't care if it's the effing New York Yankees. It's about getting wins when they matter and how you can get those wins at this point. Because we've mailed it in, folks, right, that the Royals are not going to be competing for any AL wildcard spot. They're not going to be competing for an AL Central spot. But what you want to see with this team is improvement. And with that improvement, you want to see the young guys perform. And John Heasley last night, you tip your cap to a guy like that, because to start the year, I don't think many people would have expected by, you know, early June, maybe late May, because I want to say John Heasley made his first start this year in early to mid-May. I think many people at that point would have not expected John Heasley to be in that spot, but here we are. And you want to see the growth from John Heasley. And last night, it wasn't so much of, you know, just finding a way to beat a Baltimore Orioles team. It was about hitting his spots and the stuff he possessed. And the stuff last night was phenomenal. I mean, usually John Heasley's sitting 92, 93 with his fastball. A couple of times I saw him pumping 96, hitting the corners. His changeup was fantastic. His curveball was fantastic. It was a good night to step away and say, you know what? Here is another guy from that draft class who wasn't even one of the top guys. We don't talk about John Heasley enough in that 2018 draft class. I mean, we all want to say Brady Singer. We want to say Chris Bubich. We want to say Daniel Lynch. Listen, John Heasley can be mentioned in that conversation. And this year, if you haven't been paying enough attention to John Heasley, I don't know where you've been. Because one of the things that's been inconsistent with this young starting staff is the consistency, right? Brady Singer, he'll give you back-to-back outings of going seven shutout innings. And then at one point, he'll take the mound. He may not be able to make it out of the fourth. John Heasley, though he's not been electric, the stuff hasn't been phenomenal. The one thing with John Heasley has been consistency, right? Early on in his spot in the rotation, when he took over for, you know, Greinke being hurt, took Bubich's spot, you got five innings from John Heasley. He gave up three earned runs. Now, walks were a concern, but he has dialed that back a little bit. I don't want to say it's a dialed back, but he has gotten more accuracy within the zone, but also getting accuracy in the right spots. He's not just leaving it out over the heart of the plate. But early on, you know, even when John Heasley wasn't hitting spots, his accuracy wasn't there. He'd give you five innings, three earned runs. Then he got to six innings, three earned runs. He gave his offense a chance to win the game. And last night, before he even took the mound at the top of the second inning, he had a lead. And this offense has done a good job from time to time giving their young pitchers a chance to win this game. Now, there's been nights like when Daniel Lynch took the bump against Toronto. Nobody scored until the fifth inning. That's a lot to put on a young pitcher, expecting them to be perfect. But John Heasley was damn near perfect last night. And, you know, we sometimes want to be very cynical. We want to criticize this team throughout their 60-game stretch to start the year. But the last three games, we can be nothing but proud of what the Royals have been able to accomplish. It's still not a very good team, but when they do play last night and they play the way they did, you want to feel confident. You want to feel confident about the future. But I think, number one, John Heasley, he gave you confidence last night. But number two, it was really MJ Melendez. And MJ Melendez has been a guy during this bad stretch to give you confidence about the future. Now, Blake, we were talking a little bit before the break, or excuse me, before the show started, of MJ Melendez. And a guy that is a catcher, played in right field, still playing great defense. Is it maybe the ability to move around, being a catcher, playing the outfield, hitting the way he has, and maybe giving hope and confidence to this fan base in a season that you can't really have too much confidence? I mean, they're 20-37, right? They've only had a winning streak of three games one other time this season. They're tying it right now. They could have their longest winning streak of the season tonight, but it's been the young guys. It's been the young guys giving you hope. And MJ Melendez gave, I think, a lot of fans confidence last night that the future is still bright in Kansas City. You just have to squint a little bit. Now, with MJ Melendez, the way he's been hitting, you know, Blake, we've gone back and forth on this a little bit before, but would you almost say at this point, MJ Melendez has been the best rookie for the Royals, not Bobby Witt Jr.? Or am I too crazy to say that?
No, I don't think you're too crazy to say that. I think the sample size obviously is bigger for Bobby Witt, so he's had more opportunities to fail. And I don't mean fail in the sense that it's his season's gone bad, but his learning process started day one of the diamond. Melendez got to come up a little later. But it's hard to say because there's so many bright things that we've seen Bobby Witt Jr. do starting from opening day. His hitting, his base stealing, his fielding. Now, he did struggle a little while there with some strikeouts, and his batting average isn't quite where everybody would like it. He is only batting .233 right now, but he does have a 720 OPS, which isn't terrible, isn't bad. But Melendez has been on fire lately. And you've been able to see his power, especially. He's getting one. He's getting multiple hit games. He's, you know, his OPS is 844 right now. His batting average is only 268. But really, for rookies, I'm not looking so much as at the average. It's what they're doing when they get the opportunities. Situationally, you know, last night we saw MJ Melendez make an absolute spectacular play, picking the ball off the grass in a diving right field, probably saving a double, possibly even a triple, because if he lets that ball go, it's going all the way to the wall. Dude could end up on third. So MJ Melendez has been extremely impressive, and the great thing about him and Bobby Witt is they're both extremely versatile. They can play multiple positions. Melendez can play right field. He can play catcher. He's really good at catcher, but we haven't needed it because Salvi's been playing catcher, and that's one of the best catchers in the league, if not the best catcher in the league. So Bobby Witt, he can play pretty much any diamond position as well as outfield position. So these two guys right here are going to be key going forward. Hell, you even look at a guy like Kyle Isbell who got called up, and he's been playing pretty good. I'm still going to add in that Benintendi is still considered a young guy, even though he is a vet technically and the older of the young guys, but he's been hitting off the wall this year, 316 batting average. So these young guys, and I know Benintendi, most of that guys aren't considering him as a young guy, but I'm lumping them all together right now. But Melendez, Bobby Witt, Isbell, those guys are the guys you need to see things happen. Singer finally on the mound. You take a look at everything, and John Heasley last night, you take a look at everything, there's a bunch of bright spots, and the future does look extremely bright for the Royals. It's just been a dismal season so far, so I think a lot of people through the clouds, you know, they're not really seeing the sunshine on the other side, but people forget, the sun's always shining even when the clouds are out. You just can't see it.
Certainly, and you bring up a great point that it's been tough to be positive about this team, and you know, nobody's going to pat them on the back for being competitive, right? When you are 20-37, your record says, you know, you lost a lot of baseball games this season. And when you're already out of it by late May, early June, you want to find reasons to still turn on the TV. And some of these young guys have given you that reason to be like, you know, at some point they are going to be competitive years down the road, but you want it to be with this young group that's coming in. And MJ Melendez has been nothing short of spectacular since putting on that Kansas City Royals uniform. I mean, really hasn't missed a beat. His WRC plus, I want to say, is north of 120. You know, Bobby Witt Jr., like you said, he's been on there since day one. He's going to go through the growing pains. He also has the expectation of being the top prospect in baseball. So you just think that Bobby Witt Jr. can be that savior. Now, MJ Melendez, different expectation, but he's been nothing short as fantastic because we had heard MJ Melendez's name for years. Dating back to, I want to say 2018, it was always just wait till MJ Melendez comes up in the Kansas City Royals organization because he can be that key cog of the next competitive team. And I think where I was a little bit concerned is that MJ Melendez last year was a great hitter, transformed his approach at the plate, also tapped into that power, had 41 home runs last season. And I'll be honest, I wasn't too confident that MJ Melendez could tap into that power at the big league level. It just kind of felt like he's in AAA. He's in a great lineup. You have Nick Prado around you. You have Vinny Pasquantino around you. You are a guy that is getting pitched to, not getting pitched around. And I feel like that power also in, I want to say it's the PCL, is AAA. You felt like in that moment, maybe he's just taking advantage of a ball that it wasn't really the dead ball area yet. Kind of like when I want to say it was 2019, in baseball where the ball was flying out of the ballpark, right? And I think minor league baseball had that season last year where the ball was just flying out of the ballpark. So I wanted to say that, you know, you take those numbers for what they are. MJ Melendez still had 41 bombs in AAA and between AA and AAA last year. But at the same time, you're like, I want to see this at the big league level, right? I want to see how you can transfer this from AAA to the big leagues. And MJ Melendez has shown us that power is still real, right? It wasn't a fluke in AAA. MJ Melendez has the power. He's a power-hitting catcher. He can play catcher. He can play right field, which he's done a couple of times this season. And it's that flexibility. It's been nothing short of fantastic for MJ Melendez so far in his big league career because, you know, it's tough. It's tough to step into this lineup and be expected to carry it, for lack of a better term. I mean, the Royals have had a putrid offense. And MJ Melendez was not brought up to save the offense, which is what J.J. Piccolo and Dayton Moore also said with Vinny Pasquantino and Nick Prado, right? They don't want to use them as solutions to the offensive problem. They want to wait until the offense is thriving, bring them up to only boost that offense. They want to put the pressure on young guys to say, hey, the offense is struggling. You need to step into this role to fix the offense. And MJ Melendez wasn't brought up in that role. I mean, Cam Gallagher got hurt. You know, they didn't want to, I think, put Sebastian Rivero in that backup catch role. MJ Melendez was thrusted into that role, but has still been great since taking over that role. And now it takes some pressure off Salvador Perez because he doesn't need to be the everyday catcher all the time, you know, for catching 140 games a year. No, Salvador Perez can take a step back and say he can DH, but MJ Melendez can catch. And even if you want Salvador Perez catching early on in the series, you know, middle of July, middle of August, you can put MJ Melendez in the outfield. Now, Blake, I'll ask you this too. We have seen MJ Melendez catch. We've also seen MJ Melendez play the outfield. What are your early returns of MJ Melendez playing in the outfield, and are you impressed with what he's been able to do in a spot he's not really comfortable with?
I'll tell you what, he looked comfortable last night. I mean, it's not easy to make a diving play in the outfield like that. And I don't want to call it a stroke of luck either. He was in the right place at the right time, and he had to get to an even more difficult place, lay out, and stretch out for this thing. He's got good speed in the outfield. I like him in right field because you don't necessarily need him behind the plate when you have a guy like Salvador Perez. Now, I also love the idea that both of them are both in the lineup at the same time. Perez can do the DHing or the catching. Melendez can do the DHing or just have him in right field and have another guy who can play DH at the same time while both Perez and Melendez are out there. So I think his right field performances so far have been fantastic. He looks very comfortable. He also made a long-running catch where he was probably about 1 foot from the wall out there, and he felt very comfortable. I mean, he didn't look scared. There was a high fly ball out to right field, and most guys sometimes when they're not comfortable out in right field or anywhere in the outfield, once they hit that dirt, they start to get real worried where that wall is. He must have been doing a lot in practice and really getting comfortable out there because he felt – or he looked as if he knew exactly where it was and didn't even hesitate, didn't bat an eye, and made a catch about a half a foot away from the wall. No problem. So I think he looks extremely comfortable.
And, you know, it's one thing for a shortstop, a third baseman. We saw Alex Gordon years make the transition from third base to left field. You can see those middle infielders making the transition to the outfield. MJ Melendez is a damn catcher. And now having to play right field and learning that spot, that's tough to do at the big league level. I mean, you want to say about moving around with positions. I want to say MJ Melendez had less than 20 starts in the outfield in AAA before he was called up. And I think the Royals were trying to find a way to get MJ Melendez to be an outfielder because they're not confident that Salvador Perez is going to be a full-time DH anytime soon. They want Salvi behind the plate. But what you want to see with MJ Melendez is just any way he can get into the lineup, right? And I think MJ Melendez, he played a little bit of third base. He's played some first base. He's played some outfield. You aren't really sure where you can put him yet, but it's the Royals right now finding out where you can put him. And in right field, that seems to be his secondary spot, right? When he's not DHing or he's not catching, you can put MJ Melendez in the outfield. And I want to say he might be the only catcher in baseball that can have that type of flexibility. I mean, we've talked about this before. MJ Melendez can run for a catcher. He can scoot a little bit on the base path as a catcher. And I think the Royals have seen that and said, you know, he's athletic. He's great defensively behind the plate. He's still getting his kicks in behind the plate. He's getting comfortable with these pitchers. But in the outfield, last night you saw that comfort level even take another step up. And I think the Royals are obviously proud of that. I don't think MJ Melendez's long spot in Kansas City is going to be in right field. It's going to be behind the plate. But knowing you have that flexibility, that's what's different. That's what gives you the confidence that guys like this can make the next team in 2 to 3 years very competitive. Right? When you have a guy that can catch and also play right field and run the way that he does, that's a different type of player you have in your lineup. Even Nick Prado, right? When we look at Vinny Pasquantino, Nick Prado has been a first baseman his entire time in Kansas City. And what have they done? They've seen if he can play a little bit of the outfield. And he's been good in left field when they put Nick Prado out there. So having that flexibility, having that ability to move around, that gives you even more confidence that these guys can play and play well in Kansas City, right? They're not stuck to one spot. And a lot of top prospects, you know, you do not want to move them out of their spot. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. started the year at third base, now playing shortstop, or, you know, playing a predominantly shortstop spot in the lineup because Adalberto Mondesi got hurt And now you're transitioning from, okay, we're not envisioning Mondesi being your everyday shortstop. You're not envisioning Nicky Lopez being the everyday shortstop. You want Bobby Witt Jr. to play there. As for the other guys, Nick Prado, Vinny Pasquantino, MJ Melendez, you know they need to be in the lineup. It's about where can you fit them into this lineup. And MJ Melendez right now is an everyday player. No doubt about that. He is an everyday player in Kansas City's lineup. It's just a matter of where can you put him? Behind the plate, DH, and now in the outfield. It's been impressive to see that jump because, folks, it's not easy to make that transition from your normal spot to an outfield spot, right? MJ Melendez was not an outfielder when the Royals drafted him. It's about, okay, can we see that athleticism? Can we see him make that jump? And the fact the Royals have looked at MJ Melendez and said, we have the comfortability, the confidence in him making that transition, that says a lot. That says a hell of a lot about MJ Melendez because catchers do not go play right field as their secondary position. If anything, they play third base or they play first base. It's a spot you don't have to move a lot. And right field is a complicated position, right? It's not like Little League. Right now, the big leagues in right field and left field, it's tough to read the ball off the bat. You'll have slices. You'll have hard line drives. It's not like learning a brand new position where it's easy to step into. And MJ Melendez is not stepping into an easy situation, but when you look at what he's done so far at the big league level, it's been nothing but positive. Now, Blake, last question I'll ask you before we swing it to break here. Can you squint and see MJ Melendez being maybe a full-time outfielder long-term, or is MJ Melendez a spot once Salvi kind of transitions into that full-time DH role? Is he going to be behind the plate? Or do we look at MJ Melendez and say, you know what? I can see him being the future right fielder for the Kansas City Royals.
I think that's hard because, one, I don't know how long Salvador Perez is going to play. He still has the heart of a child, and so that, you know, who knows how long that can take you. Look at a guy like Yadier Molina. He's still behind the plate every single day. So, and to me, Salvi's the kind of guy that would play baseball until he physically can't, and unless his game is just deteriorating, I don't know why they would change him as long as he's still performing. Melendez, on the other hand, I think he just wants to get out on the field and play. I don't think he necessarily, like I said, he looks so comfortable in right field. I don't think he necessarily cares. Now, if we sit down and ask him, hey, what's your future look like? He might be strongly opinionated on the catcher position, but I think he's just like, hey, I'm going to get out here and I'm going to perform wherever they put me. And so far, he's done exactly that. So as far as long term goes, I guess I can see him always being somebody that can do both. I don't ever think he'll lose the ability to catch because he's done it for so long at such a high level. I think he'll only get better at right field, but I don't know if that's going to be his permanent position going forward. But I will say that I think he'll play the majority of his at least for the next couple of years, in right field until I said, if Salvador Perez's abilities start to deteriorate right before our eyes, then I'm sure they'll probably transition him over to DH. But as of right now, I see him sticking in right field pretty much.
And the best thing about this all is knowing that MJ Melendez can play the outfield. He's not blocked anymore, right? He can stay in this lineup every single day, and he is somebody now that you can rely on to be the fix to this Kansas City Royals offense. But they have won 3 in a row. We're feeling good about that. They can go for a season-long 4-game winning streak tonight against the Baltimore Orioles, Game 3 of this 4-game set. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking some Chiefs football and have some Chiefs OTA audio for you right here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome in to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside the great Blake Schneiders. Spent the first 30 minutes talking about the Kansas City Royals. Now we are going to switch it to talking about your Kansas City Chiefs, who are still going through the offseason. But more and more news every week. We wait till about to the end of the week to get some audio from OTAs. But here's been maybe the most positive thing we've heard from OTAs, right? We want to hear about connections, relationships, what is working well for not necessarily a new Chiefs team, but a new wide receiver group. How is Juju Smith-Schuster pairing with Patrick Mahomes? How is MVS pairing with Patrick Mahomes? And that's what we've seen, or at least heard of so far, is that the MVS-Patrick Mahomes combination, that has been working out well in OTAs. Now, take what you want from OTAs, right? It's practice, right? It's practice with without the pads sometimes. You do have pads on sometimes. But so far, so good for this new wide receiver group in Kansas City, right? We're not expecting Juju Smith-Schuster and MVS to be the, I guess, production replacements for Tyreek Hill, but it's a more well-balanced group. But even more specifically with this running back group, it falls on the shoulders of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who has shouldered a lot of criticism, right? We want to talk about the weight of expectation for one certain player. You know, running back in Kansas City is not a high-up ranking spot on the depth chart, right? You think about Patrick Mahomes. You think about this wide receiver core. You think about the tight end spot with Travis Kelce. Running back comes about fourth or fifth in this offense. We don't think too much about this offense. But still, Clyde Edwards-Helaire being a first-round draft pick, you want to put that expectation on his shoulders of being a guy that can maybe rush for 1,000 yards. I don't ever see Clyde kind of being that player in Kansas City, not because he's not good enough. It's because of the way the offense is operated. It's not a rushing offense. This is not the early years with Priest Holmes. This is not the early years with Jamaal Charles. No, this is a different era. This is an era in which Kansas City is a pass-heavy offense. And when you have Patrick Mahomes, you're not looking at the running back group and saying, you need to be the reason why we win games. Now, we give this criticism to Clyde Edwards-Helaire because maybe he can't stay healthy. Maybe he's too small to be an every down running back. But I really have no issues with the way Clyde has played. Yeah, maybe using a first round pick on a running back can be criticized in Kansas City. But when you look at the numbers, Clyde has not been bad, especially when he's been healthy. I mean, even go back to his last game last season when they played in the AFC Championship game. Hell, Clyde was on pace to have a 100-yard game against Cincinnati. The Chiefs didn't run the ball, and that's because that's the way their offense is operated. It's all about passing. And when you have a franchise quarterback, you have Patrick Mahomes, you are going to be a pass-heavy offense. But here's where I have the issue is, okay, what's our expectation for Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Do we expect a 1,000-yard season? I'm not going to put that pressure on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I just need him to fit in this offense. Now, Blake, you've interviewed Clyde Edwards-Helaire before. You've seen the way he's moved around in this offense. Are we too critical of the running back he can be, or do we have to have that type of criticism because he was a first-round draft pick?
It's not Clyde's fault where he got drafted. So to put all that pressure on him when I don't think a lot of people thought he would be a first-round draft pick, especially where the Chiefs drafted him. Like, because they were just a couple draft picks away from him being a second-round draft pick. I believe what they got him at 30 or 31.
It was 30 or 31. I want to say it was 30. It was after the Super Bowl, so it would have...
So it would have been 30...
32?
Or, I'm sorry, 32.
32, yeah.
Essentially, that's a second-round draft pick. So really, the way you have to look at it is we drafted a high second-round running back. Now, we do know the detailed offseason of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The first season coming into Kansas City, anything is going to be tough as a rookie running back in Andy Reid's offense. Second season coming into Kansas City on his sophomore season, what happened? He had a damn gallbladder. Or was it his gallbladder removed? Yeah, appendicitis. I'm sorry. He had appendicitis. So he had his appendix removed, and he lost 60 pounds. So now not only is he recovering from surgery, he's also having to gain back the weight that he lost. And losing 60 pounds due to surgery is a tremendous task and detriment to your body. So his body was not healthy because then you have to gain it back quickly. And one, you're not going to gain it back to where you want to. And gaining weight that fast isn't very healthy. So his body hasn't been right for this past season. And we've seen that with the injuries that he's sustained. Now, the third season is really where things get going. He's finally had a healthy offseason. Now this is his third season in Andy Reid's offense. Is he a 1,000-yard running back? I think so. I don't think he's a 1,500-yard running back. I don't even think he's a 1,200-yard running back. But as we've stated previously on this show, and I think I stated this on your show as well, on the shift on 1510, by the legendary Jack Johnson. Plug. I think he's more of an 8-7 kind of guy, or an 8-6 kind of guy, for a total of 1,500 yards. 800 on the ground, you know, 500-700 through the air. Because they did not use him as much as you'd think in the passing game, but his pass catching ability and his pass catch rating per target was through the roof. It was one of the highest in the league, I believe. So I think now, going into this new season and understanding the offense and understanding how much more the team needs to spread out the ball, and hopefully he's healthy, this is the year. And I made the comparison on your show, I believe, to Brian Westbrook. Brian Westbrook wasn't really comfortable in Andy Reid's offense until that third season. The first two seasons, he didn't play that much. And, excuse me, his production was average at best, which is very parallel to what we've seen with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So this is really the season, and I'm very excited to see what he can do now with, like I said, healthy body, understanding the playbook, and maybe a revitalized and revamped Patrick Mahomes, in the sense of how he views the offense. Because losing somebody like Tyreek, somebody who's a dead-to-rights home run hitter, now changes the way that your offense has to regulate itself, and changes the way that your offense moves from week to week. So, and Patrick has never been shy about spreading the ball around. So this will be extremely interesting, and I think you're going to see him a lot more in the screen game. I think you're going to see a lot more in the swing game, getting him involved in the passing game as well as the run game. So I'm looking at this as more of an 8-6 kind of season, 800 on the air, or 800 on the ground, 600 through the air, get about 1,400 total yards overall. So this will be a very interesting year for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So no, I think it's too early to say, oh, he's an absolute bust. Like I said, it's not your fault where you're drafted, and because of the background of everything we've known for the first two seasons, if he doesn't perform this season, I think that's a very valid conversation to have afterwards.
And I think maybe partially that criticism comes from being in a running back draft that was very popular, right? You had J.K. Dobbins, you had Jonathan Taylor, and you wanted to look at that and say, well, the Chiefs could have had Jonathan Taylor, they could have J.K. Dobbins. Well, here's the thing, too. Indianapolis, that is a predominantly rushing offense. Baltimore, you know how much they love to run the football. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, for that time, for that pick, it made sense, because Clyde was great in the passing game, and that's what thrives in Kansas City's offense and Andy Reid's offense. They want running backs who can catch the ball, which kind of was surprising when they took Ronald Jones, you know, that they signed him to a cheap deal, one-year cheap deal. But Rojo's not great in the passing game like Clyde is. And that's where, when you look at this season, year three, you want to say, you know, 800 and 600. I think everybody would take that type of year from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You just always can't bank on it because of his health. And I don't think he's been a bust. I don't think he's been atrocious in Kansas City. What he has been is maybe not as consistent. He's not as reliable. But when he's at his best and when he's healthy, that's when you can look at him and say, okay, he fits in this offense. Now, we do have some audio for you, and we'll start it off with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because the Chiefs had OTAs on Thursday and Friday. Audio, that is, from OTAs. But here is Clyde Edwards-Helaire yesterday at Chiefs OTAs talking about the upcoming regular season.
Who goes first?
Go first?
It doesn't matter. Who wants to go first?
Hey, Clyde. Sure. Are the things you're trying to improve on this time of year, as opposed to just generally getting better, I mean, are there specific things you're maybe working on this offseason?
Well, this is a pass camp, so mainly running routes and catching passes, something that I try to pride myself on throughout the offseason, because it's only so much running you can do. Can't go running between the tackles in the offseason. So you're going to do so much training as far as that. But as everybody knows our offense, they know who our quarterback is, they know who we are as an identity. So catching passes and running routes has been my thing.
Clyde, it's interesting you said that everybody knows the offense. So many changes on offense. Mm-hmm. So a lot of teams bolstered their defenses to take on this offense. Mm-hmm. So are you going to surprise a few people with some of the new people and what they can do that might be different than what was done last year?
Everybody brings something different to the table. And That's the great thing about this offense is you can stick anybody anywhere, and as long as we know what we're doing and executing, it can be unmatched depending on, you know, as far as our matchups. I can line up from in one, two, three spot, four, and run any route as far as the route tree trap and do the same thing from MVS to Juju to McColl. So it just shows you that we can be as versatile as we want, and now everybody just has to play our matchup, and it's not the same thing that they've been seeing the last 6 years.
But do you view this as a pretty important year for you now, third year here?
Most definitely, but I mean, I wouldn't just pinpoint it as, you know, year three. I was looking at it the same way. First year I got drafted, everybody was like, oh, you know, this. Second year, deal with some injuries, and now, you know, it's year three. So it's like, everybody's like, you know, that. But it's always a sense of urgency for me. So that's just what it is.
So no different than the first two, then?
As far as that preparation
sense,
or
sense of urgency that you just mentioned? You said you should.
I don't know. Since, I mean, you know, being able to do the things that I did, starting running back as a rookie playing a Super Bowl and then really just battling injuries through last year, I feel like I bring the intensity and as far as being a professional from the offseason and coming into the season, I do everything I need to.
What's the connection with Ronald Jones like for you? I mean, just so far as you guys are just trying to get assimilated in there.
As far as like just being around,
on the field,
I mean, just field. he was somebody that I've talked to beforehand. I mean, you got Leonard was in his room, and then you have Darn was also in Tampa. So it wasn't just like, oh, this is some random dude coming in. We had conversations with each other, been on FaceTime with each other. I'm close friends with Leonard, and everybody knows Leonard's a clown. So it's like we kind of talk and do those things. But it was like, you know, a running back kind of like meal thing. Like, we don't sit here and like, oh man, that dude plays for this team, I'm not gonna talk to him. Like, we all people. So it's just one of those things. I talk to him like any normal person. And when he came in, it was just, this is what it is. Talk to you as a person. You have a question, I have a question. We learn from each other, and we go out here and try to and improve. That's about it.
The running back room looks a little different now, mm-hmm. Right? You talked about last year leaning on Daryl a lot.
Yep.
Who is it you go to now for, you know, any advice you need in that room?
It's, man, I can go to anybody. And I remember, it's funny that you say that, because I remember telling G. Lou, it's like, man, I could have a baby in here teaching me. But if they telling me something that I don't know, it's something that I can learn from. So I can care less who, you know, who's actually teaching me. I mean, he might, Pac or Ely or Fleet might see something that I didn't see. And that's just what it is. You can train anything what you want to do, but one thing you can't train in this profession is eyes. And that's the thing that separates everybody apart.
I just been out there about your, you know, gallbladder surgery, not really having a full training regimen. Now, mm-hmm. You've been able to do that. How do you feel already that maybe has made an impact on what you can do this year?
I feel great. You know, just being able to, it's a lot of things with it. You know, food intake, everything. I was, you know, weight was fluctuating, everything else. And it was something that I didn't need to spew out to the media, but it was something that I was able to conquer every week. And it was, you know, everybody, you know, you say whatever, but I mean, I got 4 incisions in my stomach, and then I was able to go out here and do fall camp without a hiccup. So it's just one of those things that mentally, man, if you tell yourself you can do it, you do it. But I mean, I wasn't necessarily thinking about it. I know this is my job. A gallbladder surgery, stomach surgery, whatever it is, wasn't going to stop me from going out there playing ball.
Fair to say this is the best you've felt since coming out?
Yeah, most definitely. I would say I had the gallbladder surgery after the Super Bowl. So I would say pretty much since after that point, yeah. Best I felt.
You guys won the Super Bowl against
I wasn't here when we won the Super Bowl.
Hey, glad you mentioned MBS. Just what's your first impression?
Speed, fast, nice hands, taller than me, obviously. but man, I like MVS. As even when we were in Texas doing our phase 1 routes and everything, I mean, just the way he explains things and you can see the him, his years in the league. His he's so wise as far as coverages and man covers and zones and everything. He's able to communicate with Pat, and they're able to like get through those certain things of communication that I wouldn't necessarily say I'm not used to doing, because that's what we do here. We communicate, but just seeing that firsthand from somebody who comes from Green, but like it wasn't even, I would say, a month before he was already diving into the playbook and understanding what was going on. So great guy, absolutely love him. We text and talk about cars and everything else, because that's one of his, obviously one of my passions, but now one of his too. So it's just one of those things. We're able to connect, not just on football, but being able to be friends and everything outside of football is what brings us so close.
You talk about those workouts down in Texas. What were the benefits of those to you?
Timing. And I would say, like, it wasn't like old linemen were there, but as far as getting the timing down with Pat, and then, I mean, like, you guys, say every week is, oh, it's a whole new offense. Everybody's, you know, different than everybody else. So, I mean, I was able to meet people. Like, that's really what you want to do. You don't want to just go out here and be my first time, you know, meeting a guy, and we all got our, you know, pads and helmets on and everything else, and it's nothing. It's like connecting. If anybody can just know me or know the next person, personality-wise, we realize we go out there, we just having fun. And if you're able to kind of get over that hump during the off season, which we did probably the first 2 or 3 days, as just breaking the ice and getting to know each other, the next easiest thing is just learning the playbook and being able to communicate about it. So that's what we did.
Clyde, being the lead back, you know, what's your initial reaction when the Chiefs do take a running back in the seventh? And then how soon do you reach out and kind of help him get acclimated?
Immediately. I mean, that was same thing that happened to me, man. It's the NFL. It's the world we live in. Every year is going to be somebody getting drafted, your position or another position or just what it is. I mean, me in college, I'm thinking like, okay, when's my turn to get drafted and when I get a chance to be on that field? I mean, it's 32 teams, not expanding anything. Like, it's what it is, bro. That next person learns, that person, you know, who's a starter gets older, and it's a time clock that'll never keep going. So at some point, all y'all will be out of here too.
Last two, Sam and Todd.
Clyde, you dealt with some injuries late in your rookie year as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously, mission with the stomach stuff. I guess that was going on most of that year. And then last year, you heard in week 5. Has it been kind of frustrating that you haven't been able to gather momentum because of things that might be a little bit out of your control?
Yeah, and I would mainly say it was really just the timing of it. I mean, you probably could see pinpoint games where, oh, this he getting ahead of steam and he about to start rolling, and it's just kind of just like, oh, well, he dealt with that injury, and it's just one of those things. And like, even with you know, just having those injuries late at the end of my rookie year, I had did something to my hip and my ankle that I thought I wasn't even gonna play year two, and I was able to get back out there year one. So it's and playing the Super Bowl. So it was just, you know, I never really was injured. Never really was injured in college. So it's just one of those things. I was hurt, but I was able to kind of, I'm gonna say, immediately get back from it. But something that they think that I was gonna be out for at least going into the middle of year two, and I was able to get back within a month. I say that speaks not only everybody as far as helping me and the training room at KC, but just the things that I was doing at home and being able to come here and get the work done and be a professional about everything. It's not just about me, it's about those guys on the field. So that's why I'm out here, that's why I'm here, that's why they wanted me here, and I'm here to win, that's it.
That was Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Chiefs OTAs a couple of days back. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back here, we'll have some more Chiefs audio for you and some more Chiefs talk right here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.